okay, going back to the 70s for this movie review. This is kind of a weird one.
Yeah, Boy and His Dog, 1975, with Don Johnson.
Which I didn't actually realize. I had actually, I don't think I ever saw this movie back in the day.
I saw it when I was a kid. I didn't know it was this old.
I didn't either. And yeah. Actually, it's funny because I didn't really realize it, but watching it, I was like, wow, it's just like Mad Max. And then I was like, oh, yeah. This came out before Mad Max. And actually, George Miller has said that this was kind of a big influence on Mad Max, on the look of it and everything like that.
Yeah, and I'd also have to say probably Fallout, the Fallout video game series. Basically, this they took a lot from this.
Yeah.
This is almost kind of like a side mission of Fallout. A lot of the themes.
It is very similar.
The tone of it, the way the shacks look, and the kind of the state of humanity in the wasteland, and then an underground civilization going on that's trying to have kind of like a utopian version of the 1950s.
Yeah.
And it's very much like Fallout.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly the same thing. And I think even the Wikipedia page for the movie even points that out. Like I said, the premise of this is very weird. It's actually based on a Harlan Ellison novella. And it's kind of like, it's post-apocalyptic, but it's also a black comedy.
Yeah, it's weird. It's action, but not in the way that Mad Max was.
Right.
In Mad Max, there was a lot of vehicle fights, you know, and not in Boy and His Dog. Boy and His Dog is all about like on-foot survival.
Yeah.
There was a series of books, post-apocalyptic books I used to read when I was a kid in the 80s called the Traveler series. And the Traveler series is a lot like this also. I'm sure that whoever wrote that series, it's been a long time since I've read it. Whoever wrote that series was inspired by this one, by Boy and His Dog. You know, it's basically a post-apocalyptic society full of savage men that basically just kind of hunt down and rape and kill women. There aren't very many women left.
Which there wouldn't be in this scenario.
Yeah, and that's the way the Traveler book series was, and that's the way this movie is.
They don't explain it.
It doesn't make any sense. But hey, things don't make sense. Sometimes things don't make sense.
Yeah, in a way, like I said, I had heard of this movie. I had a vague idea that it was like post-apocalyptic, but I didn't really know what it was about exactly. So it was kind of enlightening to just like watch it without any expectations.
Yeah.
And this is kind of one of those things. And I think the 70s was like a really good time for this, particularly for sci-fi. You could do some weird shit, like weird premises and not really explain it. And people were like, okay.
Well, during that time they had, you know, magazines, illustrated magazines or comic books, you know, like eerie and creepy and heavy metal.
Yeah, I remember those.
And you could tell that that this story is right from that generation of writing, which I used to like those old comic books. They were pretty cool. Yeah.
And like I said, I should note too that Harlan Ellison, who was notoriously cantankerous, but he actually quite liked this adaptation of his work. He said it was probably the most faithful adaptation of anything of his that had ever been put on screen. Other than he didn't think it was quite misanthropic enough because he's, you know, like I said, he was kind of a crabby old fart.
Right.
Brilliant writer, though, I have to say. But the thing I liked about this, like I said, was that it didn't really explain anything. There was really the only explanation you got. The year was 2024.
Yeah.
You know, there had obviously been some kind of nuclear apocalypse.
Sometime in the 70s or the 80s.
It was World War IV is what they called it. And it had wiped most of the people out. And then there was like a struggle for survival. That was pretty much the only explanation there was. You're then introduced to the character of Vic, who is played by a very young Don Johnson. He's supposed to be 18.
I forgot what Don Johnson looked like. You know, because I can remember him from the television series. It was a Miami Vice.
Yeah.
And he was much younger in this.
He's very young.
20-something, probably.
Yeah,
he's playing
an 18-year-old, and he can just buy that. He does seem older than 18.
And I forgot how good-looking he was. He was a good-looking young guy.
Yeah.
For some reason, kind of reminds me of Rod Stewart in a way.
He does kind of look like Rod Stewart.
But quite a cool character in the movie named Vic, and he's got this dog. That he can talk to this dog, but only he can hear the dog's responses.
He talks to the dog telepathically.
Yeah, and it is some kind of a police dog.
Yeah.
He runs across this girl, and the girl asks him, like, how come I can't hear him? You can hear him, I can't hear him. And he just goes, and really doesn't give an explanation.
Yeah.
Basically, he said, Well, because we think alike. It's some kind of a genetically engineered dog or some kind of a cybernetic police dog.
That's for some kind reason, of what I think. They didn't really explicitly say the deal was.
Vic couldn't explain it. He didn't have the vocabulary.
Because he had been raised, apparently his parents were both dead, I'm assuming. Yeah. And he had been raised after the war, so he didn't really know anything about it. So he's kind of portrayed as sort of a simpleton.
Yeah.
And the dog, whose name is Blood, and coincidentally, that's the same dog that was on the Brady Bunch.
Okay.
That same dog actor.
Yeah, dog actor.
And he's a very good actor, that dog.
Right.
And he's very cute. He's a very cute little dog. The dog is actually the most intelligent character by far. And he's very erudite the way he talks.
Yeah,
very scholarly.
He has a kind of like an exceptional human level of intelligence and education. And very stylish and everything.
Yeah, he knows everything. Like, he knows history. Everything. And so he's trying to teach the human character, like, about history, and is trying to, he's, like, quizzing him on it and
right.
stuff like
that.
Right,
and he's also kind of busting his balls all the time about, you know, he's only thinking about girls and that, you know, and that he's very base character. Because Vic is, he's a barbarian. He's a total barbarian. He's
pretty much everybody in this movie is a barbarian.
Yeah.
Except for the dog. And
even those people were bad.
Are barbarians, but they have like a veneer of humanity.
Yeah, like this 1950s country kind of mentality.
Except like a weird grotesque parody of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cool flick.
Which, like I said, you'll kind of see if it is, because we were kind of debating, because I'm not sure how widely seen this movie is. Like I said, I had heard of it and kind of roughly knew about it, but I had never got around to seeing it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a cult classic.
Yeah, and it's in a weird situation because it's in the public domain. You can buy and sell this thing. You know, nobody owns it. And I bought a Blu-ray edition of this, which must be a bootleg. I can't figure out who made it. I got it for $4.33 delivered off of eBay from an individual, and it came new in a wrapper. It had markings on it as if it was made by a company. It doesn't have any title screen. You put the Blu-ray in and it goes directly to the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't like have any, I don't even think it has any extras.
No,
or
it has no extras. There's no title. It goes right to it. You can't even choose the chapters or nothing like that. It just plays. Now, it's not Blu-ray quality. Maybe it's not a remastered copy. It's got
it's definitely not. Yeah, it's not shitty, but it's not great either.
Yeah, it still looks like a 1970s movie. Given to you as it's a lot better than you'd see on VHS, and maybe the colors might be a little bit better than DVD. But there's something about the shittiness of the way that this movie looks that kind of adds to its creepiness.
Yeah, I agree with
that. It's like you're seeing something from the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Something that has survived the
apocalypse. The tone of this movie kind of reminds me of, like I said, a lot of movies that came out in the early to mid 70s, like in the sci-fi realm, that had these kind of bizarre premises. Almost like, not quite like Logan's Run, but kind of like Soylent Green or, you know, even like, what was that other one that we did about with Harvey Keitel, Saturn III or whatever that one was. It's similar kind of thing, but this is much funnier.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's almost kind of like, I don't know, it's not like funny haha, but it's like kind of like a real, like a nasty, wicked black humor type, but it's very understated.
Yeah, it's not goofy.
No, not at all.
It's just showing you like a bizarre possible future. Things are happening as if it's normal, and it's not normal, and it's never explained why this is now the new normal. Like, why are a bunch of little children on leashes pulling a car chassis through the desert with a guy dressed up like a king eating peaches? It's never explained.
Well, and the thing too,
it's never really explained.
This is what I found interesting about the telepathic dog angle.
Yeah.
Now, the whole beginning of the movie, which is mostly just Vic and the dog, like, talking to each other and trying to find a woman. Oh, because I forgot to mention that not only is the dog telepathic, he has a little beepy thing.
Like a radar.
That goes off whenever there's a woman in the area.
Yeah, he's got him programmed, or he's got him set up to where he finds women.
Right.
And basically, Vic just hunts down these women, rapes them, and then kills them, I guess.
Well, I'm not sure.
It doesn't show him doing that, but it shows other guys doing that.
It shows other guys doing that, and him not necessarily being upset about it. He was just upset about that one time.
That she was dead by the time he got there.
No, because they had cut her up.
Oh.
And so he was like, oh, what a waste.
Yeah, because
I could have used that again.
Yeah, he could have had sex with her after she was
dead.
It was right.
It was like that. It was more like you messed it up for other people.
Right, more than her being dead. I forgot about that.
So, like I said, this is a
And this is like the new normal now. It's right. Weird.
It's like it's not commented upon.
Yeah.
But what I was saying about, so yeah, the dog can also sense women in the area, and it's like a little beepy thing that goes off. But the thing about it was that at the beginning of the movie, like I said, because I didn't really know, you know, what it was about or where it was going, which I kind of like, you know, when I see a movie to not know where it's going.
Yeah, yeah. We can't spoil this. Yeah. This is just a teaser.
But
you can watch this movie for free. So we don't want to spoil it. You know, I think you can see it on YouTube for free.
Probably, like I said, it's in the public domain. Yeah. So,
and it's not really good to know where you're going with this movie. You just have to kind of roll with it.
What I was saying was that at the beginning of the movie, when it was mostly just Vic and the dog, and I was just thinking, oh, well, either he's just imagining that the dog is talking to him, or that's the only dog. But then later on, they imply that other people know that dogs can telepathically talk,
or some of the dogs.
Or that some of the dogs can.
Yeah.
But again, this is not explained. No. And also, when he goes down to the underground bunker, they don't explain. I mean, you can kind of see where they're coming from.
Technology is more advanced than it appears on the surface.
Right.
We can't spoil everything, but not all things are as they appear. That'd be a good way.
What I was more talking about was why they didn't explain why they tried to put society back together in some weird circus-like parody of like a Norman Rockwell sort of painting, kind of. It was like, it's almost like down-homey Midwestern America, except weird and Fellini-esque.
It was kind of a totalitarian 1950s idyllic version of country life.
Yeah.
But I think it may have been kind of like we were talking about earlier with Logan's Run, like a time capsule.
Yeah.
Something where you could keep a breeding population in stasis until the surface was habitable. It may have been something like that. I don't think that was the end goal, what you saw. I think it was just, they were just holding.
That was like the transition period.
Yeah,
itself.
It was kind of like in an emergency posture until the surface had become habitable, which it was habitable, but not by much. It didn't look like you could grow anything.
Yeah, it just looked like a big desert. It looked like Mad Max, is pretty much. It was just like a big desert with like people with shitty vehicles, and they were driving around looking for. And they had tried to kind of put in, like you said, this is kind of where the Fallout, influence came in.
It looks more like Fallout.
It looks like Fallout. But you can see how some people have attempted to like put together, like they had like a little ramshackle movie theater with all they had was like 30 stag films.
And that's what Fallout's like.
Yeah.
So it's a lot like Fallout.
It was a lot
the clothing
like that.
Is like Fallout. The structures are like Fallout on the surface. And that's where Fallout, the guys that made Fallout, I think really got a lot of the ideas.
Yeah.
Of course, those memes kind of went through Mad Max type films too. But
yeah, because like I said, this was a big influence on George Miller on the Mad Max movies. Now, the interesting thing about this was that the director of it was L.Q. Jones, and he didn't direct a lot of movies. He was actually mostly an actor. He was in a lot of Westerns, like a lot of Sam Peckinpah movies and stuff. And so it was kind of interesting to see a movie with this strange of a premise made by someone who didn't normally direct movies.
Yeah.
It was just kind of, this is probably the weirdest sci-fi movie from the 70s that I've seen. And I've seen a lot of weird ones. Just because, like I said, it was so, and I'm not sure how I want to put this, it was so much itself. It just kind of came on and just presented it and didn't.
For me, the tone of the movie, I mean, some people might look at it and go, man, some old shitty kind of 1970s. No, there's more to it than that. The way it's kind of cobbled together is it's kind of like a movie that was made after the apocalypse.
It's almost kind of like meta in that
way.
Yeah,
it's like you're actually watching it, and it was made in the apocalypse.
Right.
So,
I wonder if he did that on purpose.
Maybe.
Because it does kind of come across like
that. Yeah, because some of the edits and the audio and stuff is just like, well, what kind of equipment was this used? You know,
something
found during the apocalypse to make a movie?
But you're right, that might have been a deliberate choice.
I think it might have been deliberate. Because I had the tone that I was in the apocalypse watching a post-apocalyptic movie
that somebody made
in the apocalypse.
And was showing it in the shitty movie theater right after the 30 stag movies.
Exactly. That's kind of how I think it was supposed to be.
And if it was, that's kind of a brilliant conceit if that was done on purpose.
That's how I interpreted it.
And it wasn't just done just because they didn't have the money or whatever, but...
Well, they didn't have the money, so they said, well, we're going to go full apocalypse.
Well, let's go full apocalypse and we'll make it like...
Yeah.
I kind of like that. Now I kind of hope
that they
did it on purpose.
I think that's what it felt like, because 1974, you could make a much cleaner movie than that.
That, yeah,
you can
that's
do
true.
Much better than that's that. True. So it's almost kind of like they went out of the way to make that look kind of rough.
That's true. And I said, it's hard to
say. Doesn't matter. The overall effect was that's how I'm gonna look at this movie.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give them credit.
Now I've heard. I think Shout Factory has done like a really nice Blu-ray edition of it, a restored version. Mm-hmm. And I've heard. I haven't seen it, but I've heard that it's very nice and very crisp looking and stuff. Okay. But you know, like you said, there was almost something kind of cool about seeing it the way we saw it. That was kind of like
it's kind of Martin. Was a bootleg. When you look at Martin looks like a homemade snuff flick.
Yeah.
You know,
and that really contributes
creepy.
to the creepiness.
This is along that line.
You're like, this happened in the next neighborhood over. Somebody just videotaped this shit.
Yeah, they found this in
really
the attic.
Happened. Yeah, that's what I mean. And this kind of has that feel to it. I think the best thing about this movie is the dog and the voiceover of the dog. Because like I said, the dog sounds really, he's very intelligent and he's really snarky.
Yeah.
And he's always, like you said, he's always busting Vic's balls all the times for being a dumbass and for like only having one thing on his mind.
And for jerking off.
And for, like that. Yeah, he's always like getting all over his case and picking on him and stuff. But despite that, and despite how horrible a character Vic is, or how horrible a person, he still has some decency down in there. And the dog is almost kind of like his conscience. Like, this is a weird thing to say, but the dog is the only redeeming character in the entire movie.
The way I interpret it was is that the new normal was pretty damn horrible.
Yeah.
And he's just part of the new normal. He was like a nice guy for that time.
Where everyone was horrible.
Yeah, where everyone was horrible. Right.
But the dog was the only... I mean, he was the only good character.
Yeah, yeah. He's
and like
kind of
I said,
nice
and the kind of the cool thing about it is that
he was a remnant from the old world that
was
gone.
And like the only thing about, and I think the reason that you sympathized with Vic even when he did horrible things was because him and the dog really did seem to have this bonding, this male buddy type of relationship, and there was actually some love between them.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of redeemed him somewhat. And like I said, the dog almost seemed kind of like his conscience too, in a way. He was always trying to keep his ass out of trouble and trying to keep him from doing overtly stupid things.
And Don Johnson does a good job with Vic, because Vic kind of comes off as kind of like a Johnny Reb, kind of a old West survivor.
Yeah, it has a Western
feels
flavor.
Feels very kind of deep South, you know what I mean? Wild West kind of time, you know? It's like something from the 1800s. Kind of like a Billy the Kid character, post-apocalyptic Billy the Kid.
Right. And like I said, you know, the guy that directed this had been, he was an actor in a lot of Westerns and stuff. So this definitely does have a Western flavor to it. I haven't read the original Harlan Ellison novella. If anybody has, let me know. I've read some of his other stuff, but I haven't read this one. So I'm not sure how much of that Western element was present in the book.
Yeah.
And I have to say too, I'm not going to give away the ending, but the end of this movie, like the last couple of minutes.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
It's almost kind of like the punchline of a really long involved joke. So you really have to pay attention and watch the whole thing in the end. Yeah. And then the end is just like...
Yeah, we can't spoil it.
No, I'm not going to spoil it. But
it's worth watching. And, you know, if you like Fallout, you'd love this movie. It's kind of like a Fallout side mission.
And if you like weird 70s sci-fi movies.
And Mad Max.
And Mad Max, that type of thing. This will probably be right up your alley if you haven't seen it. Like I said, it's more of a black comedy.
Right.
But if you're in the right mood and if you kind of dig that kind of thing, I think you'll kind of dig it if you haven't seen it. It's pretty weird. Like I said, it's the weirdest 70s sci-fi.
You can watch
movies.
It for free on YouTube. I don't know how good the transfer is. It's probably pretty shitty. Or you can buy the a bootleg Blu-ray. Somebody's selling them on eBay for about, I think, for $4.33 delivered. So you can't really go wrong. I didn't see the Scream Factory remastered edition. That's probably worth a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't
Scream
know what the
Factory
price on this.
Does a good job.
Or Shout Factory.
Shout Factory.
Well, yeah. Scream Factory is
it's
their
the same
horror.
Company.
Yeah, it's the same company. That's
same
just their
company.
Horror.
They do a really good job.
They usually do, and they usually are good about getting a lot of extras and stuff. And I actually heard there were some good extras on the Shout Factory version of this. They had like interviews with Harlan Ellison and interviews with the director and stuff.
That might be worth it.
So it might actually be, because Harlan Ellison is always entertaining to listen to, because he's such a crabby Yeah. He's so wonderfully crabby. He's just awesome. But, yeah. But, and the fact that he liked this movie is kind of a big deal because, like I said, he hardly liked any adaptations of his work because he was just really cantankerous.
Yeah, I think this movie is too old to do any deep analyses on because it would give spoilers and it's so old that a lot of people haven't seen it. I think just doing a regular teaser slash retrospective is the way to
approach it. Like I said, we kind of have a hard time with this because sometimes I want to go like into the themes of the movies and stuff like that.
But you'll ruin it.
And then I'm like, well, it came out in 1975. But then I think, well, maybe a lot of people haven't seen it.
And then a lot of people that saw it may have passed away by now.
Yeah, true. Because
those people might have been in their 30s when they saw it back in the 70s.
Yeah, that might be the case, too. So it's like, I know how you can say, oh, we have to have a, you know, X amount of year limit on spoilers and you can't be spoilers anymore. But,
sometimes they get to be so old.
Well, I had not seen this movie. Yeah. And, you know,
I hadn't seen it since I was a kid. Right. And I thought it was from the 80s. I didn't realize it was from the
80s. I did too. I didn't realize it was as old as it was. I didn't realize that this was pre-Mad Max, actually.
Yeah.
So that kind of surprised me when I found that out. I was like, holy shit, 1975.
But it's definitely the source material for Mad Max and Fallout.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely where this came from.
Yeah.
But yeah, so check it out if you like weird 70s sci-fi. And if you haven't seen it, I certainly had. And I don't know how I missed it, but I did. But I really liked it. It's totally bizarre. And if you like the show, remember to like, share, subscribe on all your social media and share with all your friends and relatives and whoever you might know. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. That would be much appreciated. Also, remember to tune in to our regular episodes that come out every Tuesday and our movie reviews, which come out every Friday. And until next time, bye.